This is community radio for West Marin, KWMR, 90.5, Point Reyes Station, 89.9, Bolinas. And we stream live on the World Wide Web at KWMR and Cablecast on Horizon Cable Channel 47. Support for KWMR is provided by the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin, celebrating 40 years of protecting wildlife, open spaces, ecosystems, and the rural community character of West Marin. Using science, law, and policy, EAC promotes environmental planning for our lands and waters, as well as outdoor education in the schools. More information online, eacmarin.org. And we are supported by Brian Barrientos, practicing dentistry in Bolinas since 1990. Appointment information at 415-868-0168. Please stay tuned for Open House. My guest will be Linda Elder of the Foundation for Critical Thinking. Good afternoon and welcome to Open House. I'm Lyons Filmer. Today I have on the telephone with me Linda Elder, who is one of the founders and directors of the Foundation for Critical Thinking based in Sonoma County. Linda Elder, welcome to KWMR. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Critical thinking is something that I actually remember first hearing about several years ago when my sister was in graduate school. And one of the things that she was working on was teaching critical thinking. It's a phrase that I think gets used a lot these days. Tell us what your perspective or your definition of critical thinking is.
Sure. Let me comment on the fact, kind of to bring us into this topic, that though critical thinking, the term, is used often in human societies and increasingly in human societies, people don't, again, often know what it means. They have a kind of vague conception of it. And there isn't one single definition of critical thinking. The way that I look at it is that human thinking, left to itself, cannot be trusted to be of high quality. So we don't automatically think well, though we automatically think. And there's no internal mechanism of the mind that is does a cross-check before we act on our thinking.
Boy, that would be handy if we had it.
Wouldn't it? And so that critical thinking comes in when we need to intervene in our thinking, which is a lot more often than we realize. And so what we have to do is to figure out, okay, what are the problems in thinking that are naturally there, and then how do we intervene in those problems? And that's where critical thinking comes in. So critical thinking is, here's a short way of looking at it, or a kind of a handy way of looking at it, thinking about your thinking while you're thinking in order to improve your thinking.
I love that.
And Richard Paul came up with that many years ago. He is the founder of the Foundation and Center for Critical Thinking. And it's kind of a catchy way to think of critical thinking. But now, that is a nice way in, but it may not get us very far, because we need to then ask, well, how does one do this? How do you think about your thinking? So I could say to you, well, what you need to do is on your way home, just think about your thinking. Well, that, you know, sometimes that's helpful, but a lot of times I need actual tools for doing this. And this is where our work really comes in, because what we've done is we've looked at what thinking normally does. That is, that we naturally reason, and we need to be able to reason better. And there are parts of reasoning. We need to know what those parts are. For example, whenever you reason, you have a purpose. You ask a question. You use information. You begin with concepts. You come from a point of view. Your thinking begins with assumptions and their implications of your thinking. These are what we call the eight elements of reasoning. Everybody uses them many, many times a day, but most people don't realize that they use them.
And we're using these in all kinds of circumstances.
That's right.
From what am I going to choose for my breakfast this morning to am I going to drive the car or take the bus over the hill or...
Absolutely.
Everything.
Exactly. And in fact, it's so much a part of the way we function that we don't even know that we're doing it. And so what we say in critical thinking is, no, we need to make that thinking explicit. Because until we make it explicit, we cannot begin to really solve the big problems that we face living on this planet. And there are a lot of people that are doing a lot of very good work, and you know this from your experience with interviewing people on your program and all the wonderful things that happen in Marin County and so forth. And a lot of people are doing wonderful things, but often they're dealing with one slice of the pie. And what we need to do, what we say is, one slice of the pie isn't good enough. We need the whole pie. We need to think well about every, or within every domain of human life. So you can't just think well about the people that you invite on your program. That's great that you do. But you've also got to think well economically. You've got to think well politically. If you're a parent, you've got to parent well. You've got to think well about parenting. If you have an intimate, you know, or in an intimate relationship, you've got to think well about that relationship. And so we have to think globally well, and so we need critical thinking in all the parts of our lives.
Now, is the issue more than the fact that we tend not to be conscious of our thinking processes?
I think that's a big part of it, but it's consciousness, but it's also explicit tools. So let me give you another part of the tool kit, let's say, of critical thinking, and that is universal intellectual standards. And here are some examples of them.
Golly, who set those up?
Well, when I say them, you'll see why they're universal.
Okay.
Some people sort of don't like that term, but let me give you the actual standards. And there are hundreds of them in any natural language. So if you study the dictionary, you're going to find these words, and people have been using them for hundreds and if not thousands of years. Mm. So these are some of the examples. Clarity. You need to make sure your thinking is clear. Accuracy. You need to make sure your thinking is accurate. You need to make sure you're actually dealing with facts and not just information that you think is true. Relevance. You need to make sure that you stay on task whenever you're thinking through a problem. For example, right now, you want me to be relevant. You do not want me to talk about what I want for dinner.
Right.
Right? I need to be relevant. Now, that's it. That's intuitive to you, and it's intuitive to all of us in one sense, in that we fish around for relevance. We want to be relevant. But when you are explicitly thinking about relevance, then you think at a higher level of quality more consistently. So you may go into a meeting tomorrow, and you may be listening to someone talk, you know, in the meeting, and all of a sudden you realize that person's not relevant. And I might not have noticed that before I started talking about relevance.
Or talking off task or off topic.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And how many times have any of us been in meetings where an hour later nothing had been accomplished, largely because people were irrelevant? They may have brought up an important topic. Importance is another intellectual standard. But if it's not relevant to the task at issue, then or the problem that we need to solve, then, you know, we're going to have problems in our thinking. So just to name a few others, so clarity, accuracy, relevance, significance, fairness, completeness, validity, these are all intellectual standards that all of us need to be using in our thinking every day. And we need to know when to use them.
Mm-hmm. And those are standards that I associate with journalism.
Right.
or an expectation that I have of journalism, as an example. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us assume or have assumed in the past that politicians will adhere to such standards because they are serving the country.
Oh, yes.
That
well,
kind
obviously,
of thing?
That's not a good assumption. we can assume that politicians are mainly concerned about their own vested interests.
So one of those standards, if it isn't included in one of the things you mentioned, perhaps is don't make assumptions.
Well, you know, yes. In fact, people will say, you know, don't make assumptions, but what they really mean is don't assume things that don't make sense to assume. And think about what you are assuming. And often it's very difficult to find your assumptions in thinking because we are not practiced in critical thinking. So people, for example, will, I say, largely give lip service to critical thinking, but if you ask them, what do you mean by critical thinking, you often get this pause. And you know, the answer is vague. And really, it means what they're really saying is, if you think like me, then you think critically. And I'm not really sure how to define that, but that's how it is. I mean, we've had at least three presidents that I can think of in the U.S. in the last 30 years who have called for critical thinking in the classroom.
Yes.
But none of them, Obama has done it twice, Clinton did it, and President Bush the first. They all said we need critical thinking in the classroom, but none of them have put any money into it or support into it.
Well, in your opinion and the opinion of the Foundation for Critical Thinking, does our education system in any way include what you think of as appropriate critical thinking?
I would say it's very spotty. We've been doing this for over 30 years. The Foundation and Center for Critical Thinking have been doing this work for over 30 years. I would say the term critical thinking is simply not in our consciousness in this country and in any country in the world, really. Not in the way that we think of it, in a general way, in a way that is going to cross disciplines, that has the toolbox, that is explicit for people to really get command of their thinking. We work with a number of schools, colleges, and universities across not only country but internationally, and there are a lot of schools that are trying to do something. There are a lot of faculty that are doing something. But again, often the problem is that they've only got one slice of the pie.
And what are those missing slices?
And the missing slices are, it would be the general abilities, and not only abilities, but traits of mind that we need to develop so that we can, again, reason within every part of life. So let me give you, I've talked a little bit about the elements of reasoning, the intellectual standards. Now, one other main conceptual set of understandings that we focus on are intellectual traits, like intellectual perseverance, working through issues and problems when things are difficult to work through, intellectual empathy, being able to and being disposed to understand and hear what other people are saying, especially people that we disagree with. Intellectual humility, being able to distinguish between what we know and what we don't know. Confidence in reason, being willing and wanting to follow the reasons, the best reasons, to the answer, whatever that is. In other words, not having a vested interest in seeing something a certain way. And so often what is missing in the disciplines, and therefore missing in school, is an emphasis on these intellectual traits or dispositions of mind that enable people to go into the world and think and behave fair-mindedly, to really be able to hear one another, to enter points of view that they disagree with, and to see that there are implications of all of the things that we're doing in these disciplines. I mean, take science, for example. We've had a wonderful technological advances in science. I mean, look at what we can do, how we can, you know, trace people through, you know, all kinds of electronic ways, and how we can get into your computer and figure out what you're doing. But
discoveries of DNA and tracking
Exactly. Genes
and so on.
But are we really thinking through the implications? In fact, I heard of what we're doing. I heard on your show once, not too long ago, where you were talking about the problems with x-rays. You were interviewing someone, and I think you were focusing on the problem of allowing yourself to be x-rayed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, the fact that we can do x-rays is a wonderful thing, but are we over x-raying ourselves?
Yes. Let me just reintroduce you. This is Linda Elder, who is of the Foundation for Critical Thinking based in Sonoma County. I'm Lyons Filmer, and you, dear listener, are tuned to KWMR Community Radio for West Marin. Linda, those intellectual
traits,
thank you. I was going to say abilities, but I'm sure that's another definition issue. One of them is intellectual empathy. What do you say to folks who say, well, I come from my heart? You know, I don't like to come from my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, first of all, they don't really mean that, because everybody comes from their head, whether they know it or like it or not. And the thing, because you have to think to function as a human being. You can't not think. But so what people often mean when they say that is, you're not hearing what I'm saying and I really want to be heard, or, you know, they're saying something else. And there's also this kind of movement towards that way of thinking. We need to think with our heart versus our head. But in a way, again, conceptually, it doesn't make any sense. If by that you mean, I want to hear what you're saying and I want to be heard, to me, that is coming from your head. That's coming from your intellect. That's saying, I really want to work this out with you, or something like that.
How do you frame from the heart or emotions in relation to critical thinking?
Well, I think of I have a thinker's guide on this, thinker's guide to the human mind, where I deal with thinking, feeling, and wanting, which is to me like the three functions of the mind. And so we think. We've been talking about thinking a little bit. We also have emotions, and we have our feelings, and then we have motivations or desires. And the feelings are very important because they tell us at any given moment whether things are going well for us or not going well for us.
Yes.
Right? And you can think of the whole rainbow of feeling states that someone might experience. So you can take an example like, let's say, anger. Now, you can be rationally angry or you can be irrationally angry, right? So you can be angry one of your family members doesn't keep the house as clean as you would like it to be cleaned, and so then you are angry and you act out, and that doesn't seem to be, you know, a reasonable way of looking at things. It's depending on the level of how messy it is.
You're going to have to talk to my husband.
Right.
He's always annoyed with me being messy.
So you have to work those things out. I'm trying to come up with a paradigm case. Maybe that's not a good one, but... but you can be rationally angry at, let's say, injustice. So you can see people who are falsely imprisoned, and you can be very upset about that. And that seems to me a logical reaction to something that is unfair. But now the question is, what are you going to do with that anger? How are you going to funnel that anger? And that really is telling us something about how well you're handling your emotion. And so when we talk about emotional intelligence, the way I think of it is that you think well about your emotional state. And so if my feelings are telling me I need to be upset right now, then I need to tap into that and say, okay, do I really need to be upset right now or not? And the only way I can do that is through thinking. I don't know another way to do it. And on the other hand, if you think of it this way, you can get a lot of command of your life by just tapping into your emotions. I mean, I do this if I'm reading the newspaper. You know, I always vow never to read the newspaper again, right, every time I read it, because it's so depressing. And so you try again, you know, and you read it the next day, and then you know, you're on to something else. And then sometimes I feel this, like, sense of depression, you know, like a mild, like, I'm uncomfortable. Why am I uncomfortable? Then I will trace it back to maybe an article I read in the paper. So I can intervene right there and say, okay, fine, you can be angry about that, but what are you going to do about it? If there's nothing you can do, then you've got to let it go. Or maybe you can write an article, or you can, you know, write a letter to the editor, or whatever, you know, maybe there's some actions you can take. And I think if you take things like the Occupy Wall Street movement, and, you know, the 99%, these people are saying, you know, we are not okay with what is going on here. Okay, we don't feel good about the way we're treated.
And we want to be heard.
Now, what you're seeing is very interesting now, because what we need to see now is good thinking about how to move forward. And whether and to what extent this movement works not only in this country but worldwide will depend upon, directly upon, the extent to which the people within these movements are thinking critically.
I was going to offer the thought, I'm having a feeling, I'm going to think about that feeling. The way I would describe it is, I have a feeling, I'm observing it, and asking myself, what is this? What's going on? And then what do I want to do about it? What can I do about it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's not like there's one way of intervening in the mind. And that's, to me, sounds perfectly reasonable. And but still, I would say you're really asking about the thinking. because you're not saying that, but you're saying let me sit with this feeling, let me see what's going on with it. And I don't see how you do that other than through your thinking.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned mind earlier, and sometimes people talk about mind and brain. How do you see those two? What's the mind? What's the brain?
Well, I think that's a metaphysical question, but it's a good one. To me, there have been a lot of advances in our understanding of the brain. But there have also been, in the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, a lot of cognitive psychologists especially trying to make translations from brain to mind. And I think there's some good stuff there, but I think there is a lot that's not being done very well. And here's why. I think we know a lot more about the mind than we know about the brain-mind connection.
Hmm. And what to you is the mind?
Well, the mind is processes of the human, of the brain. It's a product of the chemistry that happens in the brain.
Uh-huh.
So the mind sort of comes out of that. And therefore, and I think that's why it's sort of a metaphysical question, because we don't really, we want apples for apples, but I don't think you can get that. I think the brain is something like the apple and the mind is something like the orange.
or the mind is the apple crisp that you've made
you
from
go.
The apple.
There you go. But if you think about the mind, you can go back to Socrates 2,600 years ago and even further, and you can find a lot of intellectual scholars, people who just think well in history, who have contributed to our understanding of the mind. And this has been happening for now, you know, whatever I said, 2,600 years. So that's been going on for many years, whereas what we know about the brain has only been going on for a few decades.
Sure.
And I think we have to be very careful making the translation from brain to mind. And when you read an article in Discover magazine or any of these magazines that are where psychologists are trying to do this, I think you've got to ask yourself, wow, is that really directly connected, or did these researchers come to the situation with these assumptions to begin with? About, in other words, they already knew this about the mind, and now they're connecting it with brain
mm-hmm.
research.
I'm talking with Linda Elder of the Foundation for Critical Thinking, based in Sonoma County. I'm Lyons Filmer, and this is KWMR. Linda, tell us a little something of the work that's done by the Foundation for Critical Thinking.
Yes, well, we have been, as I said, this is our 32nd year, and we are the oldest organization on critical thinking in the world. We held the first conference ever on critical thinking 32 years ago. That's how we can remember how old we are. The Center for Critical Thinking started at Sonoma State University by Dr. Richard Paul, and then the foundation was born about 10 years later. And what we do is we try to foster fair-minded critical societies through critical thinking. Now, if you Google, people like to say that now, critical societies, you'll see very little on this subject. In fact, you'll see our website. We have a few articles on this, critical societies, because the term is not in use much in human cultures today.
Well, the what occurred to me is the phrase civil society.
Yes.
When you were talking about a number of
yes.
the traits and the qualities, mm-hmm. clarity, fairness, listening to other people without needing them to agree with you, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Those are the sorts of things that I think of in terms of having a civil society or civil conversation with other people.
Absolutely. And there's a direct connection. The reason why I like the term critical thinking,
mm-hmm.
not critical in the negative sense, is because critical is connected to the term, or is directly connected to the term critique, which is connected to intellectual standards. So that when you're having these civil discussions, you've got to make sure that you are also taking in what I will call an intellectual approach, which means you're making sure that your thinking is relevant, that it's clear, that it's accurate, that it's logical, that it's significant, and that it's fair, and that those standards are front and center of your conversation. Because if they're not, then your thinking is not going, it's just simply not going to be either doing the work it needs to do or think at the level that it needs to be to be at. So let's take the problem of global warming. Now, if we're going to solve this problem, the part that's been human created, there's only one way we're going to do it, and that's through our thinking. And it's, and we're only going to do it if we think at the highest level of quality about this issue, and if a lot of people do. And it can't be just kind of some vague sense of we need to do something about this. No, we need direct action based on high quality thinking. So this is what we've done, and we work with schools, we do presentations, we go in and do professional development programs, we hold a conference every summer at right now we're doing it at Berkeley, in the Berkeley area. We have workshops that we offer both for business people and but for mainly for educators. Most of our work is for educators, and I invite people to join us on our website, criticalthinking.org. We have a lot of resources there for anybody interested in critical thinking. We have a number of books that just for anybody, again, interested in the topic. So we have a lot that, that people can tap into in terms of resources.
Well, we have about 30 seconds left, so why don't you repeat the website and any final thoughts that you'd like to share.
Okay, the website address is criticalthinking.org. We're actually in Marin County. We're West Marin.
Ah.
Yeah, and we, you know, our focus is helping create the absolute best communities that we can through fostering fair-minded critical thinking. And we believe that if we're going to solve the problems that we face on the planet as humans, we've got to do it through our thinking, and we've got to get serious about our thinking in a broad and general way, not in these narrow ways that we have now, which are good, but we've got to do better because the problems that we face are really pressing down upon us as humans.
Thank you so much, Linda Elder, the Foundation for Critical Thinking. It's great talking with you today.
Thank you.
You, dear listener, please stay tuned to Community Radio for West Marin, KWMR. Coming up at 5:30 on Epicenter is an episode of the series The Promised Land, Marla Spivak, Think Like a Bee. I want to thank for their support the Hog Island Oyster Company, which has been growing shellfish on Tomales Bay for over 25 years. Hog Island Oyster Company is proud to be part of the West Marin community and to support KWMR. More information online at hogislandoysters.com. And KWMR wishes to thank and express its deep gratitude and appreciation to all of its volunteers, the folks who help our small staff with mailing and computer projects, filing, and an assortment of other vital behind-the-scenes work. We thank you, volunteers, including our over 80 volunteer programmers. If volunteering at KWMR might interest you, please email kwmr@kwmr.org. Or call 415-663-8068, extension 105. I'm Lyons Filmer. Thanks for joining me on Epicenter with Linda Elder of the Foundation for Critical Thinking. And please stay tuned now for